From the John Nevitta Broadcast Center, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to our first broadcast of Keeping It Real with Frankie D on the Windy City Hometown Entertainment Network. And now to start today's broadcast, here is Frank.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky.
So anytime you're getting low,
welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D. Today's topic is the state of Italian America and why we need an Italian American studies program at Loyola University in Chicago. My guests today are Dominic Candeloro, writer, author, professor, historian, and the leader of the cause for the Italian American studies program at Loyola. Also, we have Mr. Bill Dalcero, who is a teacher, a writer, and an author, and Chris Caliendo Cerami, who is heavily involved with the Shrine of Our Lady of Mount Carmel in Melrose Park and with the Joint Civic Committee of Italian Americans. So, to our topic, the state of Italian America. I have to say right off the bat that I feel our current situation with our ethnic group of Italian Americans in the Chicagoland area, I can't speak for the rest of the country, but I feel that we have to look to the past for the reason we are in the present situation. I believe that the lack of an Italian school, similar to the Greek schools and the Polish schools and the Jewish schools, is partly the reason that I think today we are lacking in our ethnic awareness, our ethnic identity, as far as the language, the culture, the history. I believe without having had that school, I believe the others that go to those schools, the Greeks and the Polish, while they're there, the kids are probably not too thrilled to be in those type of schools. But when they're adults, they appreciate that they went because they are very knowledgeable of the language and the culture of their countries. Having said that, I believe Italian Americans do not have a very good awareness, it's sad to say, but of their language, of their culture, of their traditions, and their history. Without that school, that's the reason we're in this situation. Also, I believe that back in the day, we had Italian neighborhoods. So we had these neighborhoods that's the only people that lived there were Italians. Therefore, you knew no better. It was a part of your environment. Everybody was Italian. Everything was Italian. That's not the case anymore. The Italian neighborhood is a thing of the past. Unfortunately, it seemed like the goal was to get out of the neighborhood and move far away to be in the middle of America, which not that that's a bad thing, but it did put it stunt the growth of our ethnic background. Also, intermarriage. I believe when you lived in the Italian neighborhood, you couldn't help but almost marry the same as you in your group, in your ethnic group, because that's all you basically knew. The intermarriage, you take someone who's full Italian, Italian American. They marry someone else. Now they're half, their kids are half Italian. Now they marry somebody else. Now the kids are a quarter Italian. I recently saw on the Facebook page of the Italian American page of Facebook that someone like Robert De Niro is Italian only in his last name. That's it. He's a quarter Italian. We assume and we think of him as a full-blooded Italian-American because he plays all these roles on television and the movies, but actually he's just a quarter Italian-American. That's it. The last part of the reason of our decline, I think personally, is people do not come and immigrate from Italy like they used to. I believe the last major wave of Italian immigrants was in the 70s, which, looking back, that's like 45, 50 years ago. They don't come to bring new blood, new life into our ethnic background, so we don't have these new people coming, and now we're just, it's almost like, I hate to say it, but like we're just getting older, like generation after generation after generation, and we're less and less and less and less and less Italian, and I just wonder about the future of our ethnic group. Where will we be, and what will it be reduced to? So that's my opinions. Dominic, can
we
hear from you?
Well, the long history here is that it's been, you know, five or six generations since Italians started coming to Chicago, to the United States. And with each generation, there's been more Americanization, assimilation, and all the rest. Those things happen to every ethnic group. And if you look around to some of the older ethnic groups, you mentioned the Greeks as being good at keeping theirs, but the German ethnic group has lost a lot of their identity. That's a special thing. There are those two world wars that alienated us from Greek identity, German identity. And then there was, of course, the Italians' participation in World War II, and that alienated us from the Italian identity. Being an Italian after World War II was not chic, and the espresso coffee and the styles and designers, etc. It was looking back to Italy as a devastated, war-torn country, and that's when I grew up. Who would want to be identified with that? Plus, you know, they had been classified as the enemy, and we didn't want to identify with that. We don't speak Italian, especially in public. Don't draw attention to yourself. So there are all those factors there. And I see it as the only way to really capture culture is to do what we do in the general culture. You have a library, you have a museum, you have a university, you have people studying the past, whether it's, you know, there's a cash value to that or not, because that's the culture, and you want to maintain it.
It's funny that you bring up like drinking espresso and being chic. I think today that's very popular. It's very popular drinking espresso. I've noticed that babies' names are ultrally ethnic Italian nowadays. Mm-hmm. Joe, Tony, and Frank doesn't cut it anymore. So they have these ultra ethnic Italian names. They're drinking espresso. It is chic to be Italian. It's cool. I don't think, though, in the heart and the soul and the mind, they are Italian, or they know what being Italian is, or they take the time to say, I'm so proud, and it's great that they're proud, but do I know the language? Do I know the culture? Do I know the traditions? Not really. Mm-hmm. And the problem is because your average Italian-American family nowadays, they have this pride, they give them these ultra-ethnic names, but the priority of their ethnic identity is at the bottom of the totem pole. Well, there are so many things above it, and that's unfortunate.
Well, one thing that is kind of interesting, since Chris is here, her father, Joe DiCerto, had an idea in the late 1940s to create an Italian-American high school.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, my father had great disagreements with Father Pierini, because Father Pierini wanted to build the villa, which they ultimately did. But my dad, and I believe Joanne Serpico's father at the time, were very involved in trying to get this Italian-American high school started.
Okay, that's fascinating, because that's exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. If we would have had something like that, I don't think you could help but have produced many ethnically aware children.
Yeah, well, you know the kind of social networks created by De La Salle High School.
Absolutely.
And the Jesuit High School, etc. That was the vision that he had. But then Father Pierini was convinced by the need of the old people and the compassion that necessary. And so that won the day. That became the Italian-American Project for 40 years. And that's another thing. We haven't had a Father Pierini around since, or anything like it, since the 1990s, where the Italian-American community could get behind one kind of visionary project.
Leader. Yes.
And that's what this Loyola project is.
Bill Del Gero speaking, in case nobody knows who it is. I'm just curious about the high school idea, because education never seemed to be a big thing among the early Italians. They were so busy surviving and trying to make a living, which is understandable. How did they come up with that idea, and why did people reject it? Because looking back, it's like, that should have happened.
My dad was very fortunate in the fact that he had a high school education. He went to De La Salle. He graduated from De La Salle in the 1920s. And at that time, that was kind of unheard of for an Italian-American from the South Side. My dad was second generation. My grandparents immigrated from Sicily. But my dad was blessed with the fact that, as I said, he went to De La Salle, and he was in the working world at that time. And he saw the need that these children and teenagers needed to have a focus, and they needed to learn to speak the language. Now, when he came up with this idea, it was in the 1940s, the late 1940s. And at that time, as Dominic said, you weren't taught to speak Italian. You were told to be quiet because of the war, because of everything. And my dad was a great visionary, and he kind of foresaw the need to instill in the younger generation the traditions and the qualities and the what went along with really being of Italian heritage. And I truly feel, as a baby boomer, I'm really at the very, very beginning of the baby boomer chain. Mm-hmm. And I feel that my generation is probably one of the last to know, you know, the stories and the traditions and the cookies and the baking and the Christmas traditions that our grandparents knew. I mean, these were instilled in us, and I try to instill them into my children and grandchildren. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes my grandchildren, you know, are with their friends, and they go, "You're going to go do what with your grandmother?"
Pressures.
It's just they become so assimilated into the American culture that everybody's losing their identity.
And I think you're completely right. The language, or the lack of the language, that's everything. That is huge, because when you know the language, you can communicate to the people, you can talk to the people, you can learn what makes them tick.
It opens the door.
It opens the door to everything.
You become more curious about the culture, about
when you don't know that language, it's like you're handicapped always.
Okay, yeah. Well, actually, it is complicated, because if we're talking about preserving Italian-American culture, there are many different aspects of it.
Taken from
the various slices of time, are we talking about preserving that memory of the Italian-American, Italian immigrant radicals, the anarchists even? Sometimes they were violent revolutionaries. Are we talking about preserving that memory? Well, it's not so attractive, is it? Or are we talking about the earliest immigrants who were poor, uneducated, etc.? Or are we talking about preserving the story of the Renaissance or the Romans?
I would think perhaps we're talking about a little bit of all of it.
I think we should be.
The Greeks certainly do. They go all the way back to Athens.
We should be preserving all of it, the good with the bad. And we had a pastor at Mount Carmel in the early 50s, 60s, Father Sam DeVita, who was a great guy. He was an Italian-American. He wasn't Italian. Most of the Scalabrini were at that time. Mm-hmm. He was actually an Italian-American, born on Taylor Street, went to the Army, was in the war. And he often said that the Italian culture... He used to compare it to you have the devil on this side and the angels on this side, and the Italian culture covers the whole spectrum. And that was what made us Italian. And he used to say, he said, Italian is the language of the devil, and it's the language of the angels, and we should all learn how to speak it.
Okay. Yeah, and one of the problems, though, that we have in trying to get word out about this endowed professorship of Italian-American studies is that people say, well, Loyola already teaches Italian language, so what more do you want? Well, it's the story of the Little Italys. It's the story of my grandmother and grandfather and yours, too. It's the story of Italians all over the United States. And they came from, you know, many varied places in Italy. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of different backgrounds, and they came to a lot of different places in the United States. We tend to think, oh, they went to New York and some of the estates in the Northeast, and they did come to Chicago, but they went everywhere, and their experiences were as varied as the American experience.
So would the chair at Loyola, just to clarify for the listeners, specifically focus on Chicago Italians, or kind of like a little big umbrella with everybody?
Well, I would expect that the person might focus on Chicago especially, but we're talking the whole national, the international thing. And, you know, going back to Italy, the Italian towns of origin and, of all of the immigrants, and the variety of immigration to this country. And it could include some language. Certainly, when you talk about the immigrant experience, you want to talk about the padrone. So we got to learn, what does padrone mean? You want to talk about all of the different aspects of that working class culture during that period. And this is something that, you know, there's a lot of stuff there. We want to talk, too, about what the Italian-Americans created in terms of literature and film and music and all of the arts.
Now, Dominic, is this strictly a major program, or could someone just take a class here and there? No. Is it both?
Well, unfortunately, you're not going to want to major in Italian-American studies so you can get a big, high-paying job. I mean, you might get a job teaching history somewhere or teaching literature somewhere, but your chance to do your specialty, especially in the classroom, is going to be limited. In my mind, it's an elective. An elective in ethnic history of the United States. It's a part of the United States history. And that's something that people don't see. Oh, you're just interested in Italians. Well, yeah, I am just interested in Italians, but you know what? What happened to Italians in the United States tells you a lot about what America is all about. And maybe one of the nicest things you can say about America is that look what Italians were able to do in America. They came here with nothing, and in three, four generations, you can't find a poor Italian. I have a hard time finding an Italian who's poorer than me in terms of income. And
not an intellect.
Okay, well, not an intellect. But this is an important aspect of the of what we say about America. You can say a lot of things about America, positive or negative, but that Italian American experience is one engaging part, one brick in the wall that makes up the whole edifice.
Go ahead. I just wanted to jump off of that. I drove through Charlottesville, Virginia, 4 years ago to visit Monticello, which is Jefferson's house. Well, first of all, his beautiful mansion and is based on Palladio's great villa out in Venice. He studied Italian architecture, went to Italy, spoke Latin and Italian. And as you drive out of the city, it says Charlottesville, Virginia, sister city to Poggioia Caiano, Tuscany. Mm-hmm. And it's right there. And I looked it up because I kind of had an intimation. Is this referring to Filippo Mazzei, who lived in Virginia and was his neighbor and traded ideas about the Declaration? And sure enough. Now, this is, you're talking six or seven generations back, people in the South, you know, Virginia, Maryland, recognizing the this important relationship between Thomas Jefferson, one of our founding fathers, and Filippo Mazzei, who should be considered an honorary founding father. That's the kind of thing that talks to and speaks to what Dominic said in terms of American history. That's just one aspect, but it shows you the depth and the breadth that he's talking about here, that people should study.
Now, you've been given an opportunity, correct, by the president of Loyola?
Yep.
For this?
Yeah, the president of Loyola, his name is Michael Gaudenzini, who comes from the Hill in St. Louis, an Italian-American neighborhood. Yogi Berra's from there and all the rest.
Joe Garagiola.
And yep. He is a priest, correct? His father, Michael Gaudenzini?
He's a Jesuit priest, and he's been very successful as president of Loyola in the past dozen years. He has built up, I don't know, a dozen major buildings, and Loyola is in great shape, and he has great vision, and he has challenged us to create an endowed position by raising money, and he'll throw in $500,000 and to match our $500,000.
And correct me if I'm not wrong, but most of the other Italian American Studies programs that have begun in the other universities, they were forced to raise the entire $1 million. Is that correct? So we've been given a special opportunity here in Chicago, basically half the price. So.
Yeah, this is unprecedented. Yeah.
Okay, okay.
It is a challenge, it's a boost, and we need to take advantage of it. We'd be fools not to.
Right, and in essence, this is the importance of this is our future, is the awareness of our future of Italian Americans in Chicago. And if we were not able to fulfill this, it would be, to me, it would be just a blow, and it would really tell us in a realistic format where we are at.
And you know what? If we don't do it now, it ain't going to get done. Because
no, this is it. It's now or never. Yes, it's now or never. And I hate to say this, but I feel in our community, we kind of sugarcoat everything. If you talk to the so-called leaders, everything is fantastic, and then I shouldn't even say just the so-called leaders. Even average people on the street sometimes, they'll say, everything's good. I mean, we have a Columbus Day Parade. And I think to myself, okay, the Columbus Day Parade is nice, but this is not the end-all of our entire ethnic group and where we're going in the future and our children and our children's children, because if this is all we have, we are in very bad shape. Mm. So,
yeah, you need to have an institution, and the idea of endowment is really, really important, because with an endowment, it could stay there forever. Mm-hmm. Whether there are any students taking the class or not, the professor is endowed. The money is there.
So it's a permanent forever. Chair. It is never going away.
The professor needs to be doing his teaching, researching, reaching out to the community, being the authoritative person on Italian American facts and studies for the news media when there's a controversy about Italian Americans. This would be the go-to person, the person with credentials to make a statement to say, you talk about Italian Americans in crime. Well, the statistics show that Italian-American criminality was very, very low throughout the period, even the period that you're talking about during the Prohibition era. Mm-hmm. So,
and doesn't this type of studies program lead and tend to be like a domino effect even for studying the Italian language and just an offshoot for many things in this direction?
Yeah. And Loyola has a lot of good stuff going regarding Italians. language, literature classes, history classes.
The study abroad program in Rome.
And the study abroad program in Rome.
Personally attended for 5 months. And, you know, growing up, I was an Italian American. I am an Italian American. But I always, like, inside of me, I was searching for more and searching for more. And the first, I was a very fortunate youngster. I was able to go to Italy as a teenager, and it just blew me away. And by hook or by crook, I arranged to go back to Italy a second time within 6 months. And by hook or by crook, I arranged to go back another time because I was just, I was floored. And I think that was the greatest thing in the world. And it just opened up so much to me. And that's another part, I think, of where, as an ethnic group, we are failing. A trip to Italy, to me, is the single most biggest effect of a child's ethnic background that they can have.
And a studies program can actually inspire them to do that.
I agree. Mm-hmm. A studies program would inspire a lot of these things I'm talking about.
And to get into Bill's area of expertise, if we don't define ourselves, if we don't study ourselves as Italian Americans, guess what?
We're done.
Others yep. will.
Others
and
will.
They're doing it constantly, and it's frustrating.
And the funny thing about this ethnic thing and the ethnic thing, there's nothing wrong with assimilating into Middle America, but yet if we are involved in all these ethnic Italian-American organizations, you are trying to hold on to your past, and there's nothing wrong with that as well. So it's a fine line there, you know.
Yeah, to add to that, you know, the really successful Italian Americans, I mean, the more successful you get, the less time you have to dwell on your Italian Americanness because you've got your specialty
to
soak up all your time.
And that's a shame, and that's what I think even with the families. You know, I have young children, so I'm around lots of families with kids, and that's the shame. The sports and the travel teams and the, obviously school, but the extracurricular activities definitely take priority over, well, I'd like my son to study the Italian language, or I'd like my son to study an Italian-American history class. That's just pretty much not going to happen, and that's a sad thing because if this generation doesn't get it, like I said earlier in the show, they're not coming from Italy anymore. We don't have this wave of 200,000 immigrants coming. So if this generation doesn't get it, it might be gone. And that would be a crime.
Now, we have established half a dozen professorships in mostly on the East Coast, in New Jersey, New York, Long Island, and there's one in California that can do this. But to my mind, if we don't get 20 of them at, say, strategic, larger universities in this country, the interconnectedness between those different programs will not be enough of a catalyst to keep the study of it fresh and creative. There's also there is a growing academic group in Italy that's interested in studying the emigration as an aspect. Immigration in the last 100 years or 150 years is the major theme of Italian history. So if they ignore, they've got to pay attention to it if they're going to document Italian history. So we'll be integrated into that movement too.
Well, we definitely need it here in Chicago. And if Chicago can't produce this, I don't know where we're at. It would be a sad day.
Well, you know, there are a lot of ways to get to 500,000, and there are 300,000 Italian Americans in town. So if you say, okay, pay your tax $2 each, we'd have the
signature. That's one way. You are. There is a naming rights as well, I believe, for upwards of 200,000 that we could name the program after you. So I am thinking the Bill Dalcero Italian American Studies program sounds quite nice, doesn't it?
Yes.
but yes, I mean, it's something for your pride. It's something for your group. It's something for even yourself. I mean, it would be a wonderful thing to have this named after a person, named after your father, your mother. The opportunity is there, and I hope someone takes advantage of it.
And even if you don't give $200,000 for the naming gift, all the names of people who donated will be recorded and will be prominent in the offices and on the website.
Absolutely. $20 is just as important. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. You said it's permanent. It'll be there forever. So the great-grandkids can go back and look and learn about their history.
Well, that's what scares me, is the grandkids and the great-grandkids.
Looking back and saying,
What will we have? What will we be? Will it all be forgotten? I certainly hope not.
We've already had some impact on Loyola. We had a conference a couple weeks ago, and Chris was one of the participants.
And it was really, I was very, very inspired by it. I was enjoyed the day. I had never been up to the campus up there. The campus was absolutely beautiful.
And the conference was
the conference
Catholics and Italians in Chicago?
In Chicago. And it was very, very impressive. I'm quite sorry that there weren't a whole lot more people there, but I did find it very, very educational. And I was very impressed with Father Michael
Garanzini.
He was most hospitable, very down-to-earth man. Had a beautiful mass for us afterwards, and it really was a nice day, and it should be repeated again, and hopefully you'll double or triple your attendance.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that we can do if we have this professorship. Someone there on the spot leading the charge for Italian-American studies and having a yearly conference or one every couple of years, bringing in famous Italian-Americans to mm-hmm. give speeches mm-hmm. reflecting on their Italianità art shows, film programs. And
I would even say books. I was just talking to Dominic before we started talking. And he was the leading force behind a new book that's just been released through Casa Italia, I believe.
Yeah.
Italian Women in Chicago. And one of the women, I just finished a book last night, was Mother Cabrini. And people kind of hear that name and kind of know it. And they, you know, she was an amazing woman for the things that she did for, you know, her time mm-hmm. to just come over here and just basically she's well known in Colorado, South America. She ended up settling in Chicago. Here's an example of a great Italian woman doing something great. She was actually became the first American saint too, I believe, in 1946.
Yeah.
But she's featured in the book. She's a great example of Italian Catholicism at its best. How she reached out to
people. See, these are the things I don't think our children nowadays have no idea about.
There used to be a hospital after her, which is gone.
Right. And if we don't organize it and enlighten these children and say, hey, there's a reason that you're proud.
There's a role model.
And your name is Fabrizio, and your daddy's exactly. drinking espresso, and you want a designer bag by Gucci. It's more than that. And I wish that we could get them, every single one of them, in one room and just, almost, I hate to say it, shove it down their throats. Because they need to know this. And if we don't do it, who is going to do it? No one. Yeah. That's my biggest fear.
If not now, when?
When?
If not us,
who? Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think we're running out of time, and the quote of the show today is from the Italic Institute newsletter, and it is by Marcus Aurelius. I believe he lived in Rome. In the
a
good
long
part.
Time ago.
In the good part.
In the good part.
He was a great Italian American.
He certainly was. Never let the future disturb you. You will meet it if you have to, with the same weapons of reason which today arm you against the present. And on that note, I'd like to thank my guest. I'd like to thank John DeVita and everyone out there. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Frank.
Next on your phone, with your chin on the ground, there's a lot to be learned. So look around.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky hopes.
So anytime you're getting low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant.